What's the connection between this and the Zeus and Dione story? None whatsoever. None whatsoever. They are two completely different stories. The first clearly coming from the Greek habit of giving a heroic genealogy based on an earlier great heroic father, in this case Zeus and a nymph. And the second story, a story that in fact enters the Greek world from the ancient Near East, because the story of Kronos and Uranos and this contest between the generations of the gods is one that in fact comes from the ancient Near East, from the Epic of Cumabi. So somehow the Greeks in the 8th century and later were able to entertain the notion that there was one story about Aphrodite's birth and a second story, and that the two were completely unrelated to each other. How can this happen? How is it possible for a society to have completely contradictory interpretations of their gods, of their origins? This, I think, is a very important question, because if we can answer it clearly, I think we will understand a fundamental difference between ourselves and the Greeks. And the basic answer is that there was no sacred text for the Greeks to refer to. That is to say, there was no text that had been handed down to the Greeks as the word of Zeus or of any other god. And because there was no sacred text, there could be no credo, no profession of faith measured against that. Now, it's certainly true that the terms orthodox and heterodox, which would seem to imply a notion of God-ordained truth and an incorrect interpretation of that, those words are Greek, but they come from the context of a Christian Greece, a later Greece, not the Greece of the classical period. In the classical period, it was virtually impossible then, by definition, to have heretics. There were no theological debates that ran the risk of incurring the wrath of an inquisition. No one being executed because what they claimed violated the belief system of another group. Therefore, the notion of a fatwa, as, for example, Salman Rushdie is having to cope with still today, is something that could barely have existed in the ancient world. Now, the one aberration, the exception that is going to prove the kind of rule I'm establishing here is the trial of Socrates, but please let's postpone that for another lecture where I'll be arguing that it was fundamentally a political trial and not a religious trial at all. So we have then a Greek world in which there are very fluid and flexible notions about the gods, which are quite different from the more dogmatic notions of religion that tend to come along with religions of the book, religions of the word. The result of this fluidity has been for some scholars in the modern world to believe that the Greeks really lacked what we would call faith. And I think this is an important misunderstanding that we're going to have to address. There is a clear distinction between faith, which is a matter of what is in the heart or in the head, and religion, which is a matter of how one practices, how one performs in relation to one's notion of faith and of the rest of one's community. And so I'd like to begin this part by talking about what the Greeks actually do in their religion and postpone for a moment the question of what they believe. For the Greeks, faith was essentially a private personal matter, but their religion was a public affair. Their religion consisted of actions that were done as a public performance, which were conducted for the good of the entire community. Now, absolutely central here was the act of sacrifice. The core of Greek religion was the single act of slaughtering an animal on behalf of the gods. Now, probably the reason for this was that it bound together the entire community. At some deep level of psychology, there is a link between violence and the sacred. It is a link whereby the entire community chooses a particular victim, and that victim takes on the sins of the community, and the slaughtering of that victim by the entire community ties it together in one violent act. Their blood guilt is taken on by the victim, and then, in the corollary of sacrifice, the feast that follows, the victim is dismembered, and each member of the community participates in the feast, thus taking in the victim, sharing at some level in both the guilt and the expiation of guilt that the sacrifice, the act of sacrifice, has brought with it.